This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're talking all about motherhood as a factor in mental health, and specifically within that, covering a lot of our guests' experiences around postnatal depression that went unrecognized and untreated. And so chatting to Sandra Igwe felt like such a privilege, having this conversation and having it around the release of her book, My Black Motherhood, Mental Health, Stigma, Racism and the System, which comes out this very week. This is a conversation full of misconception busting honesty, a lot of, you know, deep held insights that she's learned through not just her own experience, but also working to support so many other women around her. And I think you'll hear a lot of parallels with mental health stigma in general around just how incredible it can be to find your tribe and realize you're not alone in certain experiences. You know, that's something that I feel so lucky to, you know, get to have these conversations, to get to peek behind the curtain of other people's lives, you know, the stuff that we don't necessarily share on social media. And also to see that that is changing, that more and more people are feeling confident to share how they're actually doing and to share the complex reality of what it is to be human. You know, no experience exists in a, you know, one size fits all vacuum, that motherhood is not the same for every person, that, you know, being human is not the same. And yet there is so much that can unite us in shared emotions, in shared hardships that we can together overcome. And if I sound like I'm slightly dipping into getting like speechy there, it's because this guest did make me feel so empowered and brought such humor and joy and confidence to this conversation. And I think for women that will be able to relate to elements of her story, I could see how reassuring and hopeful she is as a role model, and someone that I feel like I could talk to all day with. So I was really glad to get to do our still relatively new bit behind the paywall as well, to kind of delve a bit further today. And before we get into the episode, I just wanted to share a few statistics. I know that we don't get into statistics quite like we used to on the show, but I do think this is really important scene setting, because there is such an issue around how women of colour are treated in healthcare settings, and in particular with today's conversation, how they're treated around childbirth. And so according to the BBC, black women are 4 times more likely to die in childbirth than white women in the UK. I also had a look internationally, and that is 3 times in the US, according to the CDC. And whilst there isn't an equivalent statistic here in Ireland, partly to do with motherhood maternity rate is lower, and also we're in a overwhelmingly white country, there isn't enough data to provide a reliable statistic, essentially. However, the nearest statistic I do have is that if you look at women born within Ireland having babies and those born internationally, there is a difference of 1.6 times when you look at that mortality rate. And so there's clearly issues from that statistic, and also from many women that have spoken up about their experiences within the healthcare system here. And I guess this is a big part of what shocks me most around these statistics, is how much the variation can exist. The idea that mortality rate could be varying to such a massive degree. And another example of that is if you look at mortality rate overall between different countries. So for every 100,000 women that give birth in the UK, for example, 7 will lose their lives during that. In Ireland, it's 3. In the US, it's 24. So massive divides where this is absolutely a conversation that has such nuance as it relates to race, but also there's clearly disparities in so many ways, including between, you know, different global healthcare systems. And so such a light to be shone on this area in general to protect women. And so with that all said, I'm so delighted to get to chat to Sandra, such a wonderful guest, such a personal inspiration to me, which is not something I would usually say of somebody that I'm just meeting for the first time, and yet it feels so apt. So I hope you get so much from this conversation, and so we'll head right into the interview. But first,
who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi guys, I'm Sandra. Mental health is a interesting topic. It's definitely been brought to the forefront as of recent in our community. Community meaning if you are a Black Afro-Caribbean person, it's something that wasn't generally spoken of growing up. In fact, I very rarely heard my mum ever mention the word mental health, unless it was used perhaps in a derogatory way, or somebody who had lost everything and was running around in the street naked. That's the only connotation that I had with or to mental health. Checking on mental health wasn't even a thing. Checking on well-being wasn't a thing. Everything was focused on physical health. You know, if you're sick, if you've got a flu, your leg is hurting, but anything to do with the mind growing up, that wasn't a priority. So becoming a mum and struggling with postnatal depression, anxiety, finding out later on that I had ADHD was a lot, extremely intense and very new and fresh for me. Being able to now say that, you know, I had clearly depression, anxiety, without getting a formal diagnosis, because again, at the time I was very much in denial, very much unaware, and the topic of mental health was very much taboo. It still is a taboo, to be fair. But my priority was to just get myself better using the tools around me, i.e. community, friendship, reading, and starting the Motherhood Group, which is an organisation that I started out of frustration, going through challenges and issues with maternity services in motherhood, in pregnancy, and not really having the safe space to speak about mental health and how it relates to being a new mother. Mm-hmm. So now that I've gotten better, for the most part, I feel really empowered speaking about mental health. And I know that some people may still feel slightly uncomfortable speaking about mental health, especially if you are a Black person, a Black woman. It's very much seen as not Black man's quote-unquote disease. It's always been seen as this is what white people go through. And as ignorant and as inaccurate as that sounds, I truly believe that that's something that we don't really struggle with. But as you know, mental health, it sees no race, colour, age, background, nothing. It can happen and it affects every single one of us in different capacities and different ways. Regardless of what you have or don't have, it can affect you. And for me, that's been a journey, yeah.
For sure. And I think that's so common, not just the lack of conversation you described growing up and, you know, when things would be mentioned, it would be in a kind of dismissive way, it sounds like, a derogatory way. But then also that element of that doesn't affect people like us. That can be in so many ways. It can be that doesn't happen to people that come from money. That doesn't happen to people that have a certain education. That doesn't happen to immigrants. We've got other kinds of concerns. And, you know, so I see that time and time again, that mentality. And for you, looking back, are you able to tell now if there was any experiences of mental illness pre-existing for you before you became a mother?
Absolutely. Looking back now, prior to becoming a mum, I clearly did also struggle with depression and anxiety as a whole. But I didn't have a name for it. I didn't have the right language to use to describe it. Some people might have said, oh, Sandra's going through mood swings, or sometimes she just gets like that. She just gets a bit, you know, sad. She's often worried, or she just over-exaggerates things around her, or she's a bit jumpy. But I didn't understand the language or use the language in my day-to-day life. So having to now, you know, find out what it was and then link it to me was difficult. So yes, you're actually right that after becoming a mum and understanding and doing my own research and, you know, creating awareness for myself, I then realised actually this has always been some form of a struggle before I became a mother. But motherhood for me just amplified it. Mm-hmm. Or made me have to tackle it on head on. Yeah.
That was maybe the tipping point where you were like, okay, now I can't avoid this anymore.
Yes, exactly.
And would you mind sharing how you reached that point? So having your first daughter and what that experience was like?
Yeah, so after having a very traumatic birth, my first daughter, and obviously having in my mind images of what motherhood would be like and expecting things to just, you know, smoothly click into place and my maternal instincts would just snap, snap into the right place. And I'd be, of course, joyous and happy and blissful. And
well, that's what you're told, right?
That's what you're told and that's what you see. That's what I saw and that's what I assumed would happen to me, even though deep down I was quite frightened. But there wasn't any space to discuss all of the anxieties I had becoming a mother. When I was pregnant, I was just told, this is a blessing. Motherhood, pregnancy, being a parent is a blessing. And that's where the conversation starts. And that's where it kind of ended for me. And so having that traumatic birth and then looking at my beautiful daughter and not feeling that instant love that everyone tells you, oh my goodness, as soon as you give birth, you fall in love straight away and that's it. And I was like, I felt a bit numb. I felt a bit numb and I felt a little bit, well, not a little bit, I felt very traumatized by the birth in itself. Now I know that that obviously had an impact. My negative birthing experience had an impact on my psychological health after, which probably made me struggle bonding with my baby initially.
And I don't want you to give any details you're not comfortable with, but do you mind sharing a bit about what happened with the birth?
Yeah, so I'm very open about my birth, both of my pregnancies, because I've been a mother twice. But with the first one in particular, for example, I was sent back home a number of times. I begged and pleaded for pain relief after, you know, trying quite a few other options. And you know, midwives were telling me that I'm exaggerating my pain. They weren't really treating me kindly. They really disengaged and dismissed a lot of the concerns that I had. I was, you know, told that I'm screaming too much when I was in excruciating pain. I just felt like I was being treated quite unkindly. And I definitely felt that my race had a lot to do with the way that I was treated. And obviously, you know, the statistics around Black maternal mortality rates, you know, we were before four times more likely to have complications. And we're also more likely to have postnatal depression and the least likely to access support. And of course, you know, my birthing experience left a very sour taste in my mouth, which I think definitely impacted the way that I wanted to receive support after giving birth and the way that I, because I didn't trust the healthcare system as a whole, when I struggled, I knew in my heart I would never go and tell any healthcare professional how I was feeling, because these were the same people that, in my mind, treated me quite poorly.
Yeah, denied your feelings previously.
Exactly, exactly.
And when you describe their being sent home, was that that you were being told the baby's not ready and we're not giving you any pain relief?
I was being told the baby's not ready. They weren't checking me properly. They weren't even acknowledging my pain. With my second daughter, the same thing happened, but I demanded that I stayed in the hospital. And then also they didn't believe me when I felt my baby's head crown. And suddenly they then believed me when they saw her head. And what? Then they called so many nurses. Yeah, exactly. I had no epidural at all or no pain relief. And actually she passed like meconium stool on her way out because she was under lots of stress as well. I've definitely simplified the story. And parts of me feels like I've buried a lot of the traumatic elements away, just because every time I spoke about both of my birthing experiences, especially my first daughter, I just kept crying, just kept crying. And even then, when I did that, you know, would cry. I remember just from the community itself, my aunties and my mother-in-law said, no, don't cry. Don't be sad about what happened. You are a mother. This is a blessing. Having to then suck up, you know, the tears, and actually felt quite embarrassed that I was traumatized in my birth and all of that, you know, having to put on this false strong persona. You know, you're sure you've heard of the strong Black woman trope and how that is quite harmful in pregnancy. Us and Black women being less likely to receive pain relief and more likely to, you know, be treated in a way that unfortunately makes us believe that we have to be strong. And then obviously your community then saying, come on, suck it up, why are you crying, you just have to get on with it. All of that will unfortunately have damaging effects on our mental health with no one to really turn to.
No, absolutely. And it's It's so horrible to hear that experience. And I know that it's far from isolated, that, you know, those statistics we hear time and time again, and oftentimes the statistics are pushed forward, but the stories of the mothers aren't, which I always find an odd thing. It's treated as like a structural issue and forgetting that, you know, this still comes down to individual people's lives that have experienced a lot of unnecessary trauma and individual elements of discrimination that need to be challenged in, you know, healthcare workers, and not just, oh, we need more funding, we need more beds. It's, you know, there's a lot that comes into the interactions you had with healthcare professionals that you should be able to trust, and they should to an extent be able to trust you, that you know your own body. You've been carrying this baby for 9 months, and if you think it's coming out, they shouldn't have to wait until they see its head to think you might be onto something.
I think trust is such a key theme throughout the book, throughout my experiences, and also through other experiences that other Black mothers have gone through as well. Trust is earned, but the problem is when you've had, you know, past traumatic experiences accessing healthcare or any main institution, and you've been, you know, under so many harmful stereotypes, judgment, feeling like you've not really been able to be yourself, or you've been silenced, then you're going to build up a wall, you're going to build up, you know, mechanisms to then protect yourself. Trust is something that if I believe more mothers have, be able to ask for support, we're able to trust that services have our best interests at heart. And that's why whenever I speak at conferences or events, and even in the book as well, I speak about building or rebuilding trust from scratch. And that will enable us to have better communication, better transparency, accountability, and be able to share our concerns. And we'll feel like we're being listened to. With that being said, being listened to in the way that every single concern that we have is being picked up and then followed through efficiently. I remember when my baby was born and I had so many concerns, you know, about her weight and if she was eating correctly and all of that. And I kept being told by the health visitor, Sandra, you know, you're just being a worried mom. I almost felt like I was disturbing her by raising my concerns, you know. It turns out later on that my daughter was sick, very sick, and they didn't pick that up. And if she had just checked her weight chart to see that she had been declining in her weight, it would have been picked up really, really quickly, very quickly, but she hadn't. All of these experiences, it's difficult. And that's why trust should be brought to a priority when we're speaking to mothers and services that can help us and support us.
Mm-hmm. I might circle back on that actually, but I want to ask you first about your experience getting back from the hospital. And so you mentioned earlier, you know, the difficulties connecting with your first daughter, and how, you know, understandably a lot of that did relate to the trauma. You would have been doing a certain amount of dissociation as a coping mechanism of that, you know, horrific experience, and also very drawn out experience, you know, trying to have this baby. And so then you get home and you have this baby in your arms that is your responsibility. You've got this new massive role as a mother, and, you know, the feeling that, okay, I need to keep this girl alive.
Yes. I remember coming home and realizing, wow, I am responsible for another human being. Their life depends on me. And then bursting into tears randomly. I remember doing that, feeling like I can't get this wrong. There was like an immense amount of pressure that I couldn't even describe. And almost like, what have I done? I have to, my entire life now is for this baby. That's what it felt like. And that for me was quite scary. And there's no training course. Well, there are some training courses you can go to, but I don't believe that any amount of training or reading can prepare you for motherhood as a whole. You just have to experience it and learn as you go, which is what I had to do. But I realized that it was harder than I thought or could imagine, in a sense that the sleepless nights, I couldn't have prepared myself for just not sleeping for months, years. That wasn't something that I even considered. I thought about, you know, what she was going to wear, how I'd style her hair eventually, if I breastfeed or bulk, but I never thought about just not being able to get a good night's sleep. My first daughter was breastfed, for example, and unfortunately she didn't like actually breastfeeding, so I had to exclusively pump, and I had to do that every 2 hours. I had a timer on my phone, and so that meant constantly being attached to a machine pumping whilst holding my baby in my left hand, and having aches on my back and having aches around my neck, and having to quickly sneak in a meal every so often. And that was really, really hard. I also remember purposely not putting on the TV, not going on social media. I know it sounds really bad, but I didn't want to be reminded of what life was like before becoming a mum. I think that for me was a coping mechanism of just trying to stay in my bubble. And that also meant that I was ignoring my friends' phone calls. I didn't realise at the time that was probably also another key indicator of going through postnatal depression. But I stopped answering my friends' phone calls, stopped going on social media, stopped watching TV. And I didn't like the windows being open. I didn't want to see people. I just wanted to stay in my bubble and just try my best to get through every single day. Every single day felt like if I can just get through this day, everything would be okay.
Yeah, it sounds like a real survival mode. And perhaps part of it is what you would be confronted by, of not just the world that you were missing out on and feeling so isolated from, but also, I guess, particularly with social media, how other people were putting across their parenting. Because I think that mentality you described earlier of, oh, you're lucky to have a baby, and that's the beginning, middle and end of the conversation so often, does encourage parents to then filter the way they present parenting to the world. So they'll complain about the sleepless nights, but there can be this pressure to be like, oh, but, you know, we're glad that we have a child. Like, they have to sort of explain away legitimate difficulties.
I'm laughing because that is always the caveat sentence. Oh, I'm so tired. Oh, this is so hard. Oh, but, you know, this is a wonderful place. You almost have to point at that extra sentence in just so that you don't look like an ungrateful person. And that's one of the things that I struggled with, was looking ungrateful or appearing ungrateful to those who maybe weren't in a position to have, to be a mum or to have children. Also, I was married as well. So people would say, Sandra, what's the problem? You've got an amazing husband. You've got a lovely home. You've got this beautiful baby. You've got, and it's almost like they're listing all the great things that you have. Like I said to you, mental health challenges doesn't see race, age, your husband, the nice house you have. It doesn't see all of that stuff. It doesn't care about the things you've accomplished. It just happens. And that's why at the time, I felt immense pressure also to play up to that stereotype myself. I'll be very honest now and say that I literally put on my mask, my invisible mask, and had to, you know, smile at the camera and post and say, you know, oh my goodness, look at my gorgeous baby, guys. This is the best thing that's happened to me, because I had to play up to that facade that I saw other people do at the time. Mm-hmm. But now I don't care.
Which, no, and I can understand it, but it would also make you feel even more isolated. And then for you, when you did open up to people like friends or family, what was the response when you told them how you were actually doing?
Yeah, I found that part the hardest, was opening up to those that I felt like I could trust, family and friends. One of my best friends came to visit me. She came down after I gave birth to my daughter, maybe like 2 or 3 weeks after. And as I opened the door, I remember her saying, Sandra, you look, wow, you just look like so amazing, just glowing. And I was angry because I was really depressed. But all she could see was in her mind, she said, what did she say? She said something along the lines of, you just seem so content. Like, this is what you've been waiting for. And in her almost saying that, it kind of kept me quiet for a long time, until she had to go. And I was really sad that she was going, and I started crying. And I said, oh, you know, it's really hard, you know. She said, oh, you'll get through it. It's almost as if nobody wanted to really listen to me or speak about it. It was like an unwritten rule that I learned quickly, that you might be able to share one or two things, but you will be met with, you'll get over it, or it'll be fine, or you're just tired, or maybe it's just, you know, lack of this and lack of that. I told my mom, and again, she was like, why are you crying? What are you depressed about? And that question just kept popping up, what are you depressed about? As if there has to be a neat answer as to what the depression is linked to. And I couldn't really explain it myself.
Yeah, well, you have to justify it in the way that you wouldn't for a physical health condition.
Yes, exactly. why is your leg hurting? I don't know, it's hurting. It's just, I couldn't justify my mental health issues. And so I had to literally hold it all in. I had to, yeah.
And was there a particular point then that came when you realised you couldn't hold it in any longer?
When I started to speak to other mothers, and that's why the community aspect is so important to me then as it is now, is finding women or people that can relate to your circumstances. So I now realise that looking back, when I did try to speak to family or friends, they weren't new mothers, or they couldn't really relate, so they couldn't really understand. But when I spoke to this girl that I met on Twitter and we really shared some of our challenges, I felt so comforted. I felt like, oh my goodness, I am not... She was based in Liverpool and I was nowhere near there. But just the fact that our kids were born a few weeks apart and she also was struggling with her mental health, that was so comforting to know that I am not alone, that it's okay to not be okay all the time, and that you don't have to justify the reasons why you feel depressed. That was amazing. And just so forming and creating a tribe, forming and having meetups, events, workshops, chatting to mums on WhatsApp or on social media, it was so therapeutic. And for me, that's when I realised, okay, I'm not alone in this.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of us, all of us are struggling in some capacity. But the problem is nobody was going to get professional help. And so I realised immediately that, oh my goodness, if something about mothers from Afro-Caribbean community struggling and definitely not getting or seeking professional help. And for the ones that actually do, they also have negative experiences and they then feed that back. Once I realised that, when I was organising events for mums to come down, meet other mums, connect, speak about the challenges, the highs, the lows, areas for improvement, accessing maternity care, mental health care, what I started doing was inviting professionals into our space, because then out of speaking to each other, mothers were able to then realise their own symptoms and then say, do you know what, I feel empowered enough to get support. And that support was there. You know, it was there afterwards, and I've realised that was a more effective way of accessing professional support, was within the community, amongst ourselves. But having those conversations, I think, really empowered me and gave me a voice. I really felt really silenced and tricked into not speak, because I'm quite a bold person, but that was the one area where I felt like I had to just go along with the idea that motherhood equates to pure bliss and happiness and that there are no challenges. And now I can't stop speaking about it. Sorry.
No, I love that. I, you do a brilliant job speaking about it. You know, I'm reminded of so many of our listeners talk about how empowering it is to open up about your mental health generally and to speak about things that, you know, we are encouraged not to speak about, that we worry about the stigma that we'll face if we do. And there is something, I think, very specific about motherhood and postnatal depression where it can still so often feel like something you're admitting to, you know, this big admission that this isn't the fairy tale that I thought it was going to be, that I'm encouraged to think it is, and that I, you know, I guess you want it to be. You want to believe like the media portrayal of motherhood that comes up in the ads where, you know, the right supplement milk and everyone's smiling. And, you know, the reality is there's so much complexity, there's so much exhaustion. You can never be told all the things that might happen. And so I can see how wonderful it was to like get to have those conversations, but also really difficult to see the gaps and, you know, how many issues there are within maternity care, because on one hand, it's a really incredible industry and one that a lot of doctors really love to go into because you're dealing with new life, whereas the majority of other parts of healthcare are relating to, you know, people aging or end of life or people's health on the decline rather than new life. And yet, you know, there's a long way to come. You know, here in Ireland, there was a case in 2012 where an Asian woman died, and in the investigation around that death, which seemed to be entirely preventable, a major factor in it was that her decline was partly not noticed because her skin going paler was not recognised. And, you know, that was part of then reforms around, okay, well, maybe this isn't one of the key indicators we should be using anymore. And, you know, it's so horrible that it took someone's death for that to be examined. And that's one of the things that, you know, really scares me, that there's absolutely the overt cases of racism, and then there's the elements also that can be built in, that even people of colour working in these industries can have, you know, gaps in training and can have the best intentions and then still fall short.
Absolutely. You mentioned just the discrimination of not recognising complexion changes in a brown woman and things like that, aspects of healthcare that completely ignores or leaves out people that have darker skin tones, for example, is extremely harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Harmful for everyone who wants to have adequate, safe, dignified care. Just cracking open textbooks, I rarely see brown skin. How can you say that you want to support, you know, all people, all mothers, when we don't even see ourselves in resources, curriculums, projects? It's difficult. That's one of the reasons why also I set up Motherhood Group, is because they cannot constantly say that Black mothers are hard to reach, that we're not able to include them in our services, in our research. We're not really accessible, and that's so inaccurate. We are absolutely everywhere, you know, and Motherhood Group has been able to involve Black mothers in research projects, campaigns,
mm-hmm.
so that our voices can be embedded in the work that is supposed to, you know, support and save us ultimately.
Yeah. And are you based in London?
Yes, based in London, but we do work all around the UK, but I've always been based in London.
Well, I check, because it's just particularly ludicrous in such a diverse city and equally with such a diverse healthcare workforce as well, you know, that these issues are so prevalent. And so for you, I'm so impressed with how you took this experience, and it sounds like really quickly transitioned it into helping others, that, you know, the empowerment you felt of reaching out and feeling you weren't alone, you wanted to pass that on straight away. But for you, what points of support were you able to access specifically? And, you know, was there an opportunity to get like a formal diagnosis and support outside of services you were creating yourself?
To this day, I've never been able to get a formal diagnosis on my postnatal depression, but I definitely know that I definitely did have depression and anxiety after giving birth. But that's what I want more mothers to do, especially mothers of colour, is to get diagnosis. I've been able to do that for example, my ADHD as of 2 years ago. It was something that I never even considered getting diagnosed, because I thought if I get diagnosis, that's another label that I have to add to my CV or to my life. It's already, for me, it's really hard enough, you know, or challenging enough being a minority here in the UK, being a woman, and then having to say also, oh, and I struggle with my mental health. That's like three labels that will make it difficult to just navigate my way through life. And also at the time, my priority was finding peace, getting better, finding my groove in motherhood, being the best mum I could possibly be to my kids, and then finding the new Sandra, because I desperately wanted to get back to the old Sandra. But I realised that when you become a mother, you can never really get back to your old self. You are giving birth to a new version of who you are, and that's okay. Giving birth to a baby, but also giving birth to a new Sandra, a new person. And so I feel like I found my rhythm, my groove. Like I mentioned earlier, there is no manual for motherhood, but you have to find your own way of, you know, experiencing motherhood. There will be so many dips, there'll be challenges, there'll be highs, there'll be lows, but finding ways of coping with it, finding a support network, creating a support network, learning how to trust yourself, finding ways of empowering yourself, finding confidence. I had to, you know, create other mums, spaces for other mums to have a safe space to share their challenges. And in doing that, I found my strength. In giving mothers a voice, I found my voice. In giving mothers a space, I created my own space, and that helped me get better. I always advocate for mothers combining, you know, really good professional services, as well as holistic trauma-informed support, as well as finding or tapping into their own personal communities. And that community might look like family, friends, a tribe of mothers. It could be a faith-based organization, or it could even be online groups, social media, books, but finding ways of mixing that all together and finding a way of getting better. That's the most important thing, and how you then cope with it moving forward.
Yeah, no, I love that. And for me, I found it incredibly helpful to have the diagnoses that I've received. And part of that has been the necessity of, oftentimes you need the diagnosis in order to get certain NHS support, or, you know, or equivalent in other countries, right? And so that's something that, for me personally, I've been so glad of, but I absolutely do hope that we get to a place where there can be more support without a diagnosis, whether that's preventable, whether that's because it's something that you might have moved past certain severity of symptoms. That doesn't mean that that's necessarily the end of the story, and that you shouldn't, you know, you don't deserve support, you know, further down the line. And so, yeah, I'm glad that you're finding your own way with that.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And you mentioned in your list of wonderful resources that exist, books, and you not only are supporting so many women, you know, personally, but also you've created this resource to reach even more. So could you tell me a bit about My Black Motherhood, which just came out as of this being released 2 days ago?
Yes, thank you. My Black Motherhood is my baby. It's my book that I have written.
Your third baby.
My third baby. Blood, sweat and tears went into this book. Writing it, I cried. Reading it, I cried. And then I had to also do the audiobook, and I also cried like 3 times in the session, which was quite annoying for the person that was helping me record in the studio. And the subtitle is called Mental Health, Stigma, Racism and the System. It's a very strong title, I know, but I wanted it to spell out exactly what's in the book, not to confuse anybody whatsoever. But what I find most powerful about the book is that although my voice is narrating my experience and my story and the themes, but I make sure that I include other mothers as well. So we have many, 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 many mums who have written their own accounts as well of what it's like being a Black mother, what it's like being a birthing person, trying to access support, struggling with their mental health, dealing with cultural pressures, societal pressures, and also just raising children here in the UK with, you know, melanated skin and all of the nuances that impact the way that we receive care and the way that we understand or respond to mental health or maternity services as a whole. And I'm really proud that I've been able to put this together, because for far too long, I think as a community, we have been quite silent around how having to be strong all the time is not only perpetuated by healthcare services or just the system in general, but also by our own community as well. You know, growing up, it was so awesome to be strong. You know, I'm a strong, independent Black woman. That was the anthem that we all we all said. And actually, it was quite seductive and quite, it was very glamorized. It was a good thing to be seen as independent, strong, and I cannot break. But actually, writing this book and making a stand that actually I am not strong, I would love to be soft, baby girl. I call myself baby girl now, which means I'm allowed to be vulnerable, delicate, express myself, get things wrong, and I'm still allowed to be in receipt of support, of help, of a softer tone, of being given the benefit of the doubt, being given grace, all of these things that I don't believe has necessarily been given to Black mothers, Black women so freely. I'm demanding and begging in this book that you give it to us. And especially in one of the most vulnerable times of our lives, being pregnant and being a new mother, you know? So yeah, I really hope you guys enjoy it, because I enjoyed writing it and reading it myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sounds like you got a great deal of catharsis kind of getting to, you know, metaphorically and literally like close that chapter and be like, okay, this is the definitive like writing down of such a difficult time. And now, you know, was there a feeling that you could put it to bed to some degree?
Yes. When I was asked to join the panel discussion for the launch of the Birthrights Inquiry into racial injustice, and they asked me, why did I want to be involved in the 1-year inquiry? And I remember saying, It's because of revenge. And everybody laughed. But when I said revenge, I meant it's almost me taking my power back to what I felt like I had no control over. I didn't have control over my emotions at the time, or control over how services treated me, control over the stigma around perinatal mental health as a whole, racism, the culture that I was born into. And I guess being involved in the work that I do now and being able to write this book is almost saying that, listen, these are the cards that some people are dealt with. This is how you can empower yourself to get through it. And this is what you need to understand to support women like me better. So yes, it's very, very therapeutic. The book, for me, I found it quite like a closing the chapter of that area of my life where I felt like there were so many unanswered questions. Why wasn't I spoken to in this particular way? Why did they treat me in that way? Why did I not get support after, you know, I was so evidently going through depression? Why did nobody tell me X, Y, and Z? And I feel like this book answers those questions to myself, but also will help new mothers or mothers to be in the future, mm-hmm. give them the tools or prepare themselves to what might happen to them, hopefully not as bad in the future.
Yeah, no, I love that. Any opportunity to, you know, turn your experiences into shortcuts for other people, I think is so admirable. And so we'll wrap up there in the bit behind the Apple Podcast subscriber paywall. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that idea of the strong Black woman, because I think there's so much to explore there. But for now, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.